I'm out.
Okay, this is for 14, courtroom observer conference call, and we were just discussing about having mock case scenarios and what would we do as a common law grand jury, and we were asking people to send us, email us some scenarios that we could actually work with, and my email is Legere, L-E-G-E-R-E, Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at Gmail. And, then Carl, Carl is K-A-R-L at NationalLibertyAlliance.org, and you can email them to him, too. And so I do have Lydia, who was on last week. I have what happened for her. Now, she has a lawyer that she's ready to fire, but her lawyer, I'm just going to say, this is the email I got from her, and her case was only 2 days ago, so I must have gotten this yesterday. She says, my case is dismissed, but when I questioned my attorney, see, he told her it was going to be dismissed beforehand. He admitted that it was not permanent. According to him, that case cannot be dismissed permanently because there is no misconduct committed against her, Lydia. Actually, there are many misconducts and violations committed against me, but he doesn't want to admit that. He is going to expunge charges against me, and it will take 6 weeks. I haven't received official dismissal documents yet. It looks like my counsel and DA agree that for dismissal, because DA could not secure presence of the main witness, our daughter, to testify in court. What I observed recently and during past year is the counsel and DA and the judge agree to whatever they present to him. For this reason, I don't feel comfortable with my counsel. I feel that he doesn't act in my best interest at this point. I want him to fire him. Is it a good idea to do it now and to employ someone knowledgeable from NLA to take care of my case, since I still don't know much about the law? The trial didn't take place. He told me at the last minute on September 9, 2016, that there is a good chance for dismissal. Can you suggest me what would be the best step for me to take now? In 2 to 3 months, I will move to Pittsburgh. She's in Knoxville right now, where I know there is an NLA group that could help me. Affidavit, which I delivered to my lawyer and to the court clerk, didn't have much influence on my case. My lawyer was very upset about this affidavit. He said that the DA might think I am out of control and make my case worse. Please let me know what you think about this.
Okay, I can sort of respond to that a little bit.
Okay, right.
The first thing is, I'm sorry, I'm going to mute you. Jan, can I mute you? Oh, thank you. The first thing is we really at NLA don't have people who can help her out.
Well, I emailed her that, and I said, NLA doesn't hire people out to help people.
We don't do that. So my opinion would be to keep the attorney, only because you really don't know much about the law. If you don't know much about it, keep it or try to look for another one. One of those two options. I'm not sure. What is the situation? Is this a house issue or?
Oh, it's her daughter, custody of her daughter.
Oh, custody of her daughter. Okay. That's an interesting one. Like, at this point, it's probably going to hurt you if you don't go with one of their people, like an attorney. I hate to say that, but if you just kind of fire people, my experience is that the right paperwork doesn't go in, and you know, they find you guilty immediately, just stuff like that.
Right.
And
they act like you're crazy. But what I think it's interesting that he said that an affidavit of evidence makes you seem like you're crazy.
Yeah. An affidavit of evidence?
Well, that's
what is that?
Yeah, is that he, her attorney got really upset with her because she did an affidavit.
Oh, yeah. It's just called an affidavit. It's not like an affidavit of evidence, just an affidavit with evidence. Like,
right, but
you know?
Why would that make him say, well, then he might think you're out of control.
I know, yeah. And that's a tough, yeah, that's a tough situation. I really wouldn't know, and I can't, like, recommend what she should do, but those are just some things to consider. When she makes that decision, I don't want to kind of lean her one way or the other because I think that's unfair. But, you know, generally we don't have anybody who could really help her get out of the situation who is knowledgeable. And the other thing, too, is there are some people in different states, but they can't really help you because they each state has its own law. And unless it's a federal case, which I highly doubt it is, it's not really, you know, you can't just get an attorney from California and have them go to New York. They have to be, like, certified in each state if they want to work for the system. So, you know, it's pretty rough. What I would recommend is definitely learn. Get to a point where you can do it on your own. And then if you feel that your attorney is ready to screw you over, then remove the attorney by firing the attorney. If you keep in their system, they'll try to play it out as long as possible.
Well, that's what it means is it's dismissed,
yeah.
It's not permanent. See,
yeah.
I've watched this over and over again with a couple I know up in Washington, and this stupid stuff that they're doing, you know, They painted the garage without a permit. Well, there's no such thing as a permit to paint your garage or even your house. But they went after them, you know.
Yeah.
And they would prove in court, and they would dismiss it that it wasn't permanent. They would just go after them again.
Yeah, they do that when they need to be prepared or they need to prepare for something. That generally means that something bad is coming and they want to kind of catch you by surprise. When they do stuff like that, that's sort of my take on that in general. But, you know, that's pretty much all I have to say on that. Yeah.
Okay, so I guess because of the attorney and we don't know the whole...
Yeah, we don't know the whole story either. So.
You know, a child custody case and we don't really have the... there's a guy, actually there was a guy, okay, I'm going to give you, I saved this from this guy who gave us some very interesting advice. Where is it? I saved it. Where did I save it? In here? Oh, yeah. So he got the notice from, you know, the courtroom observer notice. And so here's his advice, and I think some of it's good, but he just says, when I sent out the courtroom observer, he just goes, look, stop defending yourself. make affidavits of what happened exactly as you both were the only parties involved. Have them notarized. Place your right thumbprint over your autograph. Use red ink pad. Place a 1 cent stamp or Fox dollar stamp. What the heck is that?
I have no idea.
Right, I don't know what a Fox dollar stamp in the right uppermost corner of affidavit. Also place your autograph on the lower right side of the back of the affidavit. Always autograph on the right side, as this is signifying the last verbiage on page. This is what I have found out was done in the past. Also in the affidavit, state that you are doing business as the all caps and legalist use of name as further described in Rule 220. I look these up and read them. Read them again until you understand your status. You probably think this is some crazy guy saying things, and then he goes, not. They have created a scripted government that has everyone believing that they must answer to them. Wrong, he says. The people wanted to be secure in their everyday life, so they started out by hiring a sheriff to help them, help keep the peace, not to control the people, but today the police are telling the people what to do. This is a quote from the code, which I don't know what code he's talking about, but it's D1. Any court, okay, this is interesting. Maybe you'll recognize it. Any court having reasonable cause to believe that a person is guilty of violating this section shall have the person brought before the court either by summons or warrant. No arrest warrant or summons shall be issued by any person authorized to issue the warrant or summons, nor shall criminal charges be instituted against a child's parent, guardian, or custodian for a violation of subsection A based upon the allegation that unreasonable corporal punishment was administered to the child, unless the affidavit of complaint also contains a copy of the report prepared by the law enforcement officer who investigated the allegation or independent medical verification of injury to the child. If your affidavit states that there is no independent medical verification of injury to the child, ask your child if any medical professional attended to her. Not the school nurse. There must be a certificate on the wall in the nurse's office. That is their rule and code. Your daughter, if injured, must be attended in a walk-in clinic or hospital by professionals. Ask to see the records evidence. Now, I did send her this because I thought it had some interesting things in it. And he said, now, this is where it gets into the... This is just a short paragraph, but if it were me, I would, before entering the vessel, that is the gated door you walk through, I am Johnny from the family of Jones, DBA, doing business as Johnny Jones, the cat, all caps. The stated party in question, and as I enter, I am bringing the land with me.
Yeah, that sounds like man of the land stuff, and that doesn't work.
I don't agree with that part because
yeah,
that makes them reject you.
Right. No, that's a bad thing.
That part I don't agree with because he said if it was me, well, I kind of like the code stuff that he mentioned.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've never heard of the stamp thing before.
But I don't know where he's got this code. What code? Code from what?
Yeah, I don't know either. You know, the one thing about that kind of stuff is you really have to be careful about where you get this information from. And I'm also curious to find out where they did the thumb, where they put their thumb in and
right.
did that with the affidavit.
Right.
I mean, a signature should be just good enough.
Right, I know. That's what I think. I think it's kind of, you know, it sounds like, you know, he's read things and done some stuff, you know, and I don't feel like he's had I don't get that he's had a whole lot of experience doing it. I think he just feels a bit righteous in what he's saying, which doesn't mean he's wrong, you know.
No, it doesn't.
Oh. It just means, okay, what are they going to do with it?
Mm. Right.
That's why I like what we do is we just stick to the case. We don't want to ruffle their feathers by, you know, telling them we're a man of the land or, you know, stuff that they don't
want. Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
About the thumbprint, this is Jan in Kansas. And I've just been reading everything, you know. and that I can get my hands on. And that has some significance, the thumbprint thing, which I'm not saying we should use it because I don't know that much about it. But what I've been reading about it is it has something to do with the ecclesiastical nature of the courts. And where you're proving with your thumbprint, it's actually supposed to be in your own blood, but you're proving you're the living person and not the corporate entity that signed that. But I'm not saying that we should do that. I'm just giving you that information.
So if it's supposed to be in your blood, I wouldn't trust that at all. Then they have your DNA.
Yeah,
well, you have to write some kind of, I mean, it gets real involved. And the other thing, I'll get off here, but I wanted to say, I think that's kind of funny that they told her that not to write that affidavit, which affidavits, from what I've learned from you guys, if they're not rebutted, they stand as truth.
I know.
And that she, it's like, and now it's dismissed. That's kind of comical, really. I'm out.
That her, her defense attorney is telling her not to do an affidavit because then you're gonna seem out of control. That's a crazy. That he's nuts to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wouldn't do it in blood. That very much sounds like mandible and stuff, and that's the kind of stuff that will get you in trouble and make people think you're crazy.
Right.
Because whole point. Okay. Go ahead.
What I've been reading goes back to like the 14th century. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with man on the land, but how they had people sign. You know, it just sounded like that. But I think it's, I think the funny part is she wrote that affidavit and they can't dispute it. So it has to stand as truth and now it's dismissed. Come on, people. That's just, I don't know whether I've got that put together right or not, but in my head it just clicked that way that, perhaps she could get them exposed or something. So anyway, it just struck me funny.
What I got out of what I read from him was just a thought, and Carl, I want you to just kind of help me with this, is that, so what I'm always saying is what they say in the civics course, which is have your whole case laid out in your paperwork and you have copies of it and you hand it to them and whatever, and you just, if it's bugging, say it's all in the paperwork. Well, what I was getting from him is to take your, lay your case out of the paperwork and have it, write it as an affidavit and notarize it.
It pretty much is your affidavit.
Your
case is essentially an affidavit, and I think John had said that at one point that.
And notarize it too.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think you get it notarized.
Okay.
And it's all that. So it is essentially like your affidavit all summed up in there. So yeah, that's one way to write your case is to put it in like an affidavit form and then do it that way.
I think that's the strongest thing you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, I wanted to make another announcement before we get too far in, and that announcement is that I am looking for people to make phone calls and contact members for not just like one time or for one purpose, but really as an ongoing thing where, hey, we need to make some phone calls to some people, see what's going on in Oregon, see what's going on with some of our members here or there on a recurring basis. And, anybody who's interested, please contact me. It doesn't actually require you to be at a specific meeting at a given time. All we are really asking is maybe 3 to 5 hours a week of your time, and it could be whenever you're free, to make phone calls to specific people for specific purposes as we move forward. And we just need people who are willing to make phone calls because we have a hard time finding members who feel comfortable doing that. So if you can, please just email me back and tell me you're interested. and I'll give you some more details if you get back.
Well, what you're saying is when you come up with a subject that we need to call people for, is that what you mean?
Yeah. So, like, for example, it could be something ranging from we need to check the members of this particular state and make sure all the numbers are valid.
Mm-hmm.
We need you to call them. We have a bunch of new members who just came in this week. We would like you to call them and introduce yourself to them. We have to make phone calls in the Portland area for the Bundys. We want you to make phone calls and contact everybody in the county and in the adjacent county. And this should not be a task for one person. It should be a task for a group of people. And we would split them up and send them to people and say, hey, listen, can you make like 4 or 5 phone calls? And between 20 people making 5 phone calls each, it should work fine.
Right.
That's really the theory. It's because, you know, people like the coordinators and all that, you know, they do make phone calls, but they can't make 100 phone calls. I can't call up everybody in a particular area myself. I felt kind of bad because there was one particular case, and, you know, I called all the county organizers. This was in Cook County. But I really didn't have time to call the other 70 people who were in Cook County about being a courtroom observer for the day. You know, it was just too late, and I don't have time to make 70 calls. That's like a day's worth of calls, maybe even more. So really, you know, we need people to be on demand. I wouldn't do it for really courtroom observers. It'd be more for bigger task that we have, but that's generally the purpose that we're looking for going forward. Just a little group of people who are willing to make 5 to 10 phone calls, and we'll give them a couple days to do it, and it could be any time during their free time during those few days to do it, and we would just appreciate it very much.
Oh, thanks.
So, Carl, this is Deanna in Kansas again, and I'm not online right now, so that would be a perfect job for me to do, and
okay.
I'm volunteering.
Okay, excellent. And do you have any issues with making long-distance phone calls? Like, you're okay with making long-distance phone calls, or?
Yeah, my phone,
It's included?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
No,
I just know for some people it's not. And that's one thing I should probably mention because, you know, a few people have said I'd love to be in your phone calls, but I only have local calling. I don't have long distance. So, no, that's
well,
awesome.
Unless they cut me off.
No,
if I make too many, they might tell me to quit it. But, no, for now I'm good.
Okay. Yeah, so I'll definitely put you down as someone. I mean, do you have the you said you're not online, but you do check emails occasionally?
Do I check emails? No.
Okay, because the thing is we still need to send you the phone numbers to call and a task to call. You know, and I can't really call you to give you the numbers. That wouldn't be...
Okay.
You know what I mean? I'm kind of looking... So if you have, like, an email you check every couple days...
No, I don't. When I got targeted, I guess you'd say, my Gmail account was wiped out and they wouldn't help me put it back together. They said they didn't know where all my information was and basically told me to go, you know what, you know, I just thought, oh, I'm not getting back online then. You know, that was 5 years ago when I was trying to help my mom with her health care and got noticed. And so I just haven't at this point. But I can go to the library and look on the directory. But, you know, if that's too much trouble, well, I'll just wait till I sign up and get email again. I just don't have it right now.
Okay, yeah. It's just a lot easier for me to send out an email to everybody and
of
just
course.
Say, hey,
yeah.
We just need to call. Because I got to break up Excel sheets and, you know, I got to break up information. And,
sure.
You know, it's just a lot easier.
Well, if you get really hard up, I'm here.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, I want to interject here for a second. If anybody wants a good email that's very secure, you can try riseup.net. And you have to apply and be a real person. That's about the only criteria. But,
Is that Harley?
Mm-hmm.
Was that Harley who just spoke?
I think so. Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. Okay, good, because I wrote down, he had given that before, and I wrote it down and couldn't find it. So thank you, Harley.
So, Carl, do you have any news about the Bundy trials stuff?
No, I'm left out in the dark with that. I've been kind of in my hole doing some NLA stuff lately. So if anybody has an update on that, I appreciate that, and they have the floor. All right. Well, I guess nobody has any information on that. I really am kind of left in the dark on that. We need to maybe invite somebody who's been there onto the call just to talk about it, because I'm kind of interested to see what happened, because I'm reading about it through the news, but I don't know if that's... No, I know it isn't accurate. So...
Right.
So I'm curious to see what they're actually saying, because it kind of sounds like they're doing some common law stuff, but the media kind of says different things. So, if anybody knows anybody too who is in Portland who's actually watching the case, please invite them to the call and just say, hey, listen, we have somebody from Portland who attended their case, and they like to just tell us what they saw. I'll let them have the floor. So that's about all I got. Anybody else have anything? Laura?
Ron Fleck was on the earlier call last week of the ham operator, and then he stayed on and listened to Lydia a little bit, and he actually did all this work, and he found out he called all these people in Tennessee. Nobody was really a functioning NLA member except for two guys, and he gave me their numbers, and I actually called them and left messages, and but there's this one woman named Rebecca Sharp. She goes to everybody. She goes to a lot of people's cases and does affidavits for them, and so she ended up going instead of anybody I called, and so that was nice that she had an observer too, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
Did she go to the Bundy case, or she's just going to the local cases?
Lydia's thing in Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
And so I called, that's who I was calling. I called two people in Tennessee that Ron said were functioning NLA members, and so I left messages for them. And then it was two guys, and they, actually one got back to me a few days later, and we had a good conversation, because he was all over the place, and he's been fighting his own battle with trying to get custody of his kids too, and, but he seemed really confident in what he was doing, too. So,
mm-hmm.
He just wasn't available, but Rebecca was, and she's really good. She goes to everybody. If she's around there, she goes to their case.
Oh, excellent. Maybe you could do a shout-out for her. That's excellent. So, that's awesome. Any other cases upcoming?
Mark Cordova, they wouldn't dismiss his case, and he tried to get it dismissed, and they just want to keep going on and on.
Who's this again? Mark Cordova.
Huh?
Who's Mark Cordova?
He's the one that's circumcised.
Oh, that one. Okay, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, he has a sexual assault claim. Yeah.
Anyway, so... Yeah, just false, you know, accusations, and they just keep dragging him out, and he thought he could get it, you know, dismissed, and they don't. It's the same thing as, I guess, Lydia. Oh, we dismissed the case, but it's not permanent. You know, they just, it's just weird. It's like you're stuck in a, you know, the Western medicine system too. You know, once you're in there, oh my gosh, they got you, and you got to go back for this, that, and the other thing, and then they're...
Yeah, it's crazy.
I know.
Crazy. Yeah, so that sounds like they just want to keep them on, want to suck the money out of them.
Yeah, that's what it's like. You know, it's sort of like, I know that it reminds me of what Bill Maher said one time. He goes, you know, because he's always talking against the pharmaceutical industry, and he goes, they don't want you dead, but kind of. Because if you die, you wouldn't be giving them the money. But they want you kind of ill so you can keep giving them money.
Right, absolutely.
Well, is that different than dismissed without prejudice? The non-permanent dismissal, is that the same as dismissal?
I'm not sure about that. Do you know, Carl?
Well, it could be dismissed with prejudice. Dismissed without prejudice, which means that if it's dismissed without prejudice, it means that they can go back after you again.
Oh.
And that pretty much means, like, it's dismissed, but not really. So it might be the same thing.
Well, that's what he said. I know. So you should say dismissed with prejudice.
Dismissed with prejudice means it's permanently dismissed and you can't bring it up again.
Maybe that would be good when anybody has that problem, maybe they should say, dismissed with prejudice, I want that on the record.
Yeah, you want to dismiss with prejudice.
And say that, you know, just say it and I want it on the record.
Yeah, because I know, who was it? It was, I think, Elena in New York City. You know, she went through 15 judges before one of the judges was just, you know, ready to completely knock her out. And I think her case was dismissed with prejudice, wrongly and fraudulently. But, you know, that's what they like to do. They like to dismiss it when it's them and they're on the line.
In their favor, right.
Yeah, when it's in their favor, they'll do with prejudice. When it's not in their favor, it's without prejudice. So,
okay.
You know, you got to make sure. A lot of times, too, it's like what they do to themselves or what they do to their own people is kind of what you want them to do to you, because it's sort of like they say the things and they do the procedure to protect their own. So that's sort of one thing people can help themselves out with, like, you know, like, oh, they're dismissing with prejudice, they're doing this or that. They're making sure this and that happens. So, yeah, that's just kind of one thing to kind of keep in mind. Like, what are they doing to their own people? Because, you know, it could be something that you need in your case, too. Not necessarily, but could.
Well, would that be something that you'd put in the affidavit, Laura, where you would say at the end of your statement, and this should be dismissed with prejudice because, or would that be something to include in your sworn statement?
No, the affidavit is just the facts. You don't say in your affidavit, I would like this or that. It's just more this happened or that happened.
Oh, you're just relating a story.
Yeah, you're just relaying a story. That's it. A lot of times people are like, these people violated this right and that right and this right. Mm. Well, maybe, but how did they do it? That's really what we want to know.
Yeah.
Because
okay,
really,
thanks, Carl.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, if anybody has any additional comments, you know, please come in and, you know, you can either agree with me or disagree with me. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I can be wrong sometimes, too. So, anybody else have anything they want to say? Okay, looks like we can wrap it up now.
Okay, I'm going to turn off the recording and...